Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, before we get into the news, I think it's worth pausing for a minute and just talking about the success of Sinners at the box office. We didn't have a chance to talk about that on yesterday's show, but I think it's definitely worth pointing out. So what are your big takeaways from Ryan Coogler's latest movie's financial performance, I guess?
Well, the one thing I should point out is that the numbers were even better than previously revealed. So the weekend numbers were reported around $45 million. However, Sunday was better than expected, so the official number was $48 million. So anytime you have a movie that already overperforms expectations, and then when the Monday actuals come in, that number is even higher than like was reported, I mean, you're just in, you know, excellent territory. Truly, truly, like, wonderful stuff. So yeah, Sinners debuted to $63.5 million globally, with $48 million of that coming domestically. I mean, it's very, very good. Now, this is still a very expensive movie, but, you know, with all of the markers that we have, it is well on track to justify the investment. I think, you know, we learned a lot from it in that, you know, Ryan Coogler has clearly asserted himself as one of those very rare directors, like, you know, your Christopher Nolan's, your Quentin Tarantino's, quite possibly your Greta Gerwig's of the world, that their name alone gets people in the theater. Because, you know, Coogler had worked a lot since Fruitvale Station in franchises, right? Like Creed and Black Panther. And, you know, what he did with those is well beyond what others might have been able to do with those. But then this was he was able to prove now, like, no, people will show up for my original stuff too in a big, bad way. So, yeah, I mean, it was really, really great to see. And then it just was kind of a really good weekend overall, because you still had a Minecraft movie, you know, kicking ass at number two, and, you know, that King of Kings movie did really well, and you know, there's stuff like Drop in Warfare that's kind of suffering a little bit, but I mean, overall, it's hard to look at something like this, you know, even though I didn't love the movie as much as everybody else did, I liked it, and I think you know, the fact that it's doing what it did. And the other thing worth pointing out too is that a Minecraft movie played in over 4,000 screens this past weekend, while Sinners was on like 3,300. So, you know, it did what it did on far fewer screens. Now, a lot of that has to do with, you know, the IMAX premium format stuff, but that also really helped. Like, a lot, Warner Brothers was able to effectively sell this as a must-see cinematic event and go see it on the biggest screen possible. So there were select 70mm screenings of this. There was a lot of IMAX, a lot of Dolby Cinema, a lot of premium format, and people paid and went. And, you know, that's no small thing. You know, so yeah, I mean, I'm very impressed with it. The real test, though, will be what happens this upcoming weekend when you have The Accountant 2, when you have Until Dawn, when you have the 20th anniversary re-release of Revenge of the Sith. Like, can it hold up against a pretty healthy wave of competition? But at this point, I think all the indicators we have suggest, yes, it will.
Yeah, I don't want to make a whole big thing about this and like derail the episode of the podcast, Ryan, but like I gave up Twitter a while back. I'm on Blue Sky. And even during my trip here in LA, I was able to kind of see what the movie conversation was like around Sinners over this past weekend. And I saw a lot of weird takes from people, especially Variety, and just the way that people were talking about this movie and its performance. There was a lot of couching going on, a lot of like hedging going on, and then a lot of kind of backlash to the way that stuff was being presented. Even Ben Stiller jumped into the conversation and was talking about like, why is the conversation being framed this way? And again, we don't have to like derail the whole thing, but I did want to note that for anybody else who's out there listening, who, you know, runs in our circles, so to speak. I just thought it was really strange, and I'm not above saying I think there's probably a racial component to what's going on there. And then also, I think maybe even more so, kind of a fear component from the studio side of things, because Ryan Coogler negotiated to have the copyright to his movie returned to him after, I think it's 25 years or something like that, right? So I think all of that stuff probably factors into the way that the movie was being discussed by some of the big trades and stuff like that this weekend. So I just wanted to note that.
Yeah, and I don't think that that was fair at all. And look, anyone with access to a social media platform of any kind can probably find the article or articles we're talking about. I have a somewhat centrist take on it in that I think that there's no question that you can look at the opening weekend for an original movie of any kind, let alone a vampire horror movie. And vampire movies, aside from Nosferatu, have not largely done very well in recent years. Mm-hmm. You know, from Ryan Coogler, from like all the... This opening, zero question. Just looking at the opening, it is an absolute home run, the best anyone could possibly expect. Any framing of it otherwise is just a little irresponsible. That said, there's still a longer timeline here. This movie has at least a $90 million budget. The several reports have suggested it went over that, so it's probably closer to $100 million. And Ryan Coogler has first dollar gross on this, meaning... from it doesn't have to wait till it hits into profits. He's getting a percentage of first dollar. So, you know, it's going to take some doing to get this thing to profitability in theaters. But so I'm still kind of taking a wait and see approach there. But again, to frame this as anything other than a success out the gate, like particularly in like a headline, is you're right. It does feel like it's not coming from a good place. Like, you know, I joked about this in Slack. Like, I don't often feel like an expert. Like, I just do this, but there are moments where I just have to look and go, at least I'm not that guy, you know, because I don't know. But look, it's worth bringing up. The only thing I'll say is that I you can't call this a resounding success yet on the whole, but from an opening weekend, you just couldn't ask for a better start. You know, we can probably leave it at that, but yeah.
Yeah. I also wanted to point listeners to an article that I'm going to link to in the show notes, pointing out that Sinners has I think it's an A cinema score, which is the first time that's ever happened for a big horror movie.
It's never happened before.
Yeah, that rules. So you can read more about that at the article in question. Okay, so let's move on to some news stuff. One of your most anticipated movies of the year, I think, Ryan, is Weapons from Zach Cregger, the director of Barbarian. And there's a quick teaser trailer that came out. It's very short. It doesn't really say much, but it's really effective. I really enjoyed that. I just wanted to give you a minute to wax rhapsodic about this movie. Looking forward to a lot.
It is my most anticipated movie of the year that does not have a dinosaur in it. I'm gonna make a very bold, needlessly bold statement right now that the Weapons teaser trailer that is available online right now, which is about 48 seconds, I believe, is immediately one of my very favorite teaser trailers of all time. I will throw that down. So cool that they they don't even say the title of the movie in the trailer. I mean, it's on the YouTube video, but like what they're doing to try and tee this up, like what they tee up in that teaser is so haunting and so weird and so cool without giving like anything away, but it is so immediately compelling. You're like, what is going on? And they're setting up a mystery that you are like, at least for me, like I'm like, I don't need to know another like that is so compelling.
Yep.
To tell you almost nothing, but have you be that compelled to be like, I now want to know what's going on. So great. And it looked cool as hell. Like the way those kids are running, it's so weird. I have so many questions. And yeah, I am so unbelievably on board for whatever this is. And I don't know. I can even see based on this teaser alone why like a bidding war erupted over this movie. Like the central mystery it's set up is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you mentioned it doesn't even say the film's name in the trailer. And another thing that I was reminded of when I was watching this was the original teaser for the first Cloverfield movie, which did the same thing. It didn't have the name of that film. I think it only had the release date, and a lot of people, myself included, thought that the date was the title of the movie for a while, because I think that was like one of the first times that that had been done at that scale. And speaking of the Cloverfield connection, you wrote recently about the website that the Weapons teaser trailer ends on. It kind of drives viewers to go check out this website for more information. That's very Cloverfield as well. And it seems like the director is actually potentially building a new horror cinematic universe of his own, where this movie might actually be connected in some way to Barbarian. So I was wondering, we don't have to go into all the details of what's on the website. I want people to read the article for that. But just for you, as somebody who's really looking forward to this stuff, do you think that's just kind of fun, connective, keep people involved, internet stuff, for lack of a better phrase? Or do you think there's actually going to be something in the text of the movie that connects directly to Barbarian?
At this point, it's so hard to speculate because we know so little about Weapons, but I do, what is on that website feels so deliberate. Like it might just be me hoping, like this might be wishful thinking, like, because the comparison that I make is that it feels 10 Cloverfield Lane-esque, where 10 Cloverfield Lane is completely its own movie, but it clearly takes place in that same universe. And it feels like that's what maybe they're trying to do here. Again, I don't know for sure, but putting the Barbarian connection on that website, were they savvy enough to know that people like me who work for websites like us would latch onto that and write about it and, you know, get the movie some free press? Maybe.
Definitely. I think so.
Yeah, but it does also feel like Krieger doing what he's doing right now. I don't think he would do that unless there was a reason for it. So I don't know. Like, I don't know, but it feels exciting. Like, that this could, like, if this was like a secret sequel to Barbarian, that would be sort of less exciting. Like, I don't know that that needs to exist, but the idea that like there could be this Twilight Zone-esque universe of weird stories from the mind of Zach Krieger, like, okay, that's cool as hell. Let's do that. So I'm into it. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere, but it's a fun thread to pull on for the time being.
Okay. All right. So a couple more things before we take a break. I wanted to mention that Alicia Silverstone's Clueless is getting a Peacock sequel TV series. There actually was a Clueless series announced back in 2020 that was supposed to star Alicia Silverstone, but that project ended up falling by the wayside. And now a new version of it has come along. Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who worked on shows like Gossip Girl and The OC, are attached to write this version. So just wanted to mention that. BJ is a big fan of Clueless and has a whole thing about like, yeah, this is interesting, but like, does anybody really want this? So you can read that in the link in the show notes.
It feels very 2019 streaming to me. Like, it feels like kind of thing where like when all of these streaming services were launching and they're like, what do we have that people care about that we can turn into a needlessly expensive TV show that might not even get watched that much? I think Clueless actually has gas in the tank. I think a reasonably budgeted movie would make more sense, but
yeah,
whatever. Like, I don't hate the idea of doing a Clueless follow-up, but it's weird to do it as a show on Peacock. So I don't know.
Yeah. It would be like if the Freakier Friday movie that we were talking about recently was a Disney Plus original, like really how many people are actually going to watch that? If you make it a theatrical event and like tell people to care about it in the right way, then maybe they'll care about it in the right way.
Yeah, I felt that way about Hocus Pocus 2. Like, I felt like that was such a mistake to put that on Disney Plus. But, you know, whatever. I think largely streamers seem to be learning this lesson, but Peacock is lagging pretty far behind, so who knows?
Okay, and then the last thing before we take a break is the trailer for I Know What You Did Last Summer is online right now. And what did you think about this, Ryan? Because we talked about this recently, like we don't really have any idea how this is going to perform. I don't really know. This kind of seems silly to me, you know, like the idea that the same thing happens. And then also it's not a remake. It's a sequel because they're getting Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jennifer Love Hewitt to come back and reprise their roles. So like, it almost seems like
they're trying to turn this into a legacy sequel when the foundation of it just doesn't really support that. But I don't know. I guess that's just my gut reaction from this trailer. I'll wait until I see the movie to make final judgment. But what's your initial reaction to this?
So I actually didn't watch the trailer partially by design. Like, if I don't have to, I won't, because I'm kind of in the bag for this one. Because I have a weird affinity for I Know What You Did Last Summer. Like, it's not a great slasher movie of that era, but it is, like, weirdly, like, representative of the time. And I do mm-hmm. sort of like it a lot, even though it's kind of silly. Like, it's a silly movie. Like, so I think it's like a silly movie that's trying to take itself seriously. And I do think the notion of what this movie's trying to do, where it's clearly like the foundation, like you said, is like a remake, but then you're sort of somehow making it a legacy sequel. If they can lean into that being a little silly, but kind of take it super seriously, it might actually work. So I'm sort of hoping that works, but I don't know. I don't know. Like I'm curious enough about this happening that I'm like, let's see.
Okay, well, let's take a break and we'll come back and talk about a bunch of stuff from Star Wars Celebration.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker.
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%, vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
So Star Wars Celebration took place in Japan this year, and a bunch of news came out of that. And Ryan, I have been so busy that I haven't really had a bunch of time to dig into all the details on this. But I noticed that Sean Levy's Star Wars movie that stars Ryan Gosling has a title and a release date now. So it's going to be called Star Wars Starfighter, and it comes to theaters on May 28th, 2027. So you wrote some stuff about this, especially how it takes its name from a prequel era video game, and then it's actually going to be pushing this franchise somewhere new. So tell me a little bit about what we know about this film so far.
Yeah, so probably not intentionally, at least not like intending to be inspired, but it is worth noting that there was a 2001 video game called Star Wars Starfighter that took place pretty much around the time of Phantom Menace and centered on a ragtag group of like pilots, you know, trying to save Naboo. And so I doubt that that's what Levy and Gosling had in mind with this movie. You know, they probably might have at least been aware at Lucasfilm that that title existed in the library. So if nothing, mm-hmm. it's a bit of a trivia. But the bigger thing is that what Gosling and Levy were saying during Celebration is that the word new was thrown around a ton, but the one, you know, most of the plot details are being kept under wraps, but we do know that it takes place around 5 years after the Rise of Skywalker, which is a completely unexplored part of the timeline. Ryan Gosling is playing a new character. They previewed a new ship in the art that was shown there. And one thing I will say is this is a little bit of what Levy had to say. This movie is a new adventure. It's new characters. It takes place in the time period after the Battle of Exegol, after Episode 9. There's so many opportunities to tell a Star Wars story that has all of the heart and action and fun of Star Wars, but to do it in ways that are new and original. That starship, that peak of that starship, is just one example of the design of the world that we haven't seen on screen. So that's a lot of what they're saying, is that like this is new. And look, I think, I don't know what this movie's going to be. I don't know. I know I like Ryan Gosling a lot. I know that there's versions of Sean Levy as a director that I like a lot. And I like the idea of Star Wars finally trying to do something new. This mm-hmm. is not like the Rey movie, which is like sort of another sequel trilogy. This is not like, it really feels like they are, even if it feels a little safe, it is what a lot of people have begged them to do, which is do something new. So it is hard not to be at least a little excited about that, at least from my perspective. But yeah, I mean, for now, there's really not a lot we know about it other than that. But the interesting thing is that it will be releasing on the 50th anniversary of A New Hope. So it's kind of a big deal.
So given Lucasfilm's, I would say it's an obsession, really, with crossovers and like showing other characters and iconic characters from Star Wars projects in other projects, and kind of like, really almost maybe and or aside, not being able to sit back and just let a thing be. You know, it almost kind of has to like compulsively include some sort of reference to something else just to kind of like get those fan juices tingling, you know? Do you think Rey is actually going to appear in this movie given where it falls on the timeline?
I wonder about that, but I don't think so. And I just think it's because the title alone, and it suggests it's just taking place in an entirely different type of the part of, like, it's a galaxy, you know, it's not like one world. So it does feel like it could just be completely disconnected. And it almost feels like they're setting it up to do that. Now, that's not to say there won't be Easter eggs, mentions of people, things, places, whatever, but it doesn't have to be Rey, and I can't see it being Rey. It's just a guess. I have no idea what this movie's going to be. And again, maybe that's just me hoping. I kind of hope it isn't that, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Daisy Ridley as a performer, but I hope that they're able to have the confidence to kind of do their own thing. And I'm excited about whatever this Rey movie is, because I just like her as that character. And
think I agree.
That maybe kind of like shaking off the baggage of whatever that sequel trilogy was, and like giving her room to operate in a new story, definitely has potential. So I'm excited about that as well. But we've talked about this before, but like Sean Levy, Ryan Gosling could go either way for me. So we'll see as we learn more about this.
Well, like if the real steel Ryan Gosling or real steel Sean Levy shows up here, like, I will say I've watched a lot of people talk on stages about projects they've announced and things. He seemed, there was like a light in the guy's eyes when he was talking about it. And I'm like, you know, let's hope here. Like, I'm willing to have hope that this is like coming from a good place. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple more Star Wars related things. There's a new Darth Maul show coming. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So not a lot was revealed about this, but this is an animated TV show that was announced during one of the panels at a Star Wars Celebration. It is called Star Wars Maul Shadow Lord, and it seems like this is going to be taking place kind of around the Solo era-esque, where we get that little tease in Solo of Darth Maul sort of leading a syndicate at that time. And it looks like, he's going to be taking an apprentice under his wing, and the idea is that this might be this Twi'lek Sith named Talon, who will maybe be like recycling this idea that George Lucas had for his abandoned version of the Star Wars sequel trilogy. And so, Darth Maul was going to be the villain in the version of episode 7 that Lucas was putting together. This is knowledge that's been out there for a long time. And so, you know, who knows? It's an interesting idea because this character existed in the comics, which is, which are no longer canon. But as we've seen many times, Lucasfilm has taken things that from the old expanded universe that were no longer canon and made them canon again, with like Grand Admiral Thrawn being the biggest example of that. So we'll see. I love what they've done with Maul as a character in the animated shows. After killing him off so unceremoniously in Phantom Menace. And so I'm into this. I think it's the perfect avenue for a project like this.
Excellent. Okay, so you mentioned Grand Admiral Thrawn, and I've not seen any of Ahsoka, but there was some news about Ahsoka Season 2 that I think, and again, I was kind of in and out, but I think I saw you kind of like freaking out about this in our Slack channel, right?
I was losing my mind over this. So like
I didn't want to mischaracterize it, but I'm
No. I was on social. I made like 4 posts about this, and I never do that anymore because I just like so first and foremost, Star Wars Rebels is some of my very favorite Star Wars that exists. Period. End of discussion. Love it. Grand Admiral Thrawn is one of my very favorite characters in all of Star Wars. Absolutely love it. And Ahsoka Season 1 ties very much into Star Wars Rebels, and I liked it, but I think Ahsoka Season 1 was very much felt like setting, it was one of those things where it felt like it was leading up to the story I actually wanted to see, which will be in Ahsoka Season 2. So they had a panel about it, and here's the thing, I'm going to talk about this, and some of you are going to be like, okay, that's kind of cool, whatever. this is so rarely do you feel like a piece of news was aimed so squarely at you that you're like, does anyone else even care about this? It was like, this felt so made for me. But Dave Filoni was in classic self was very afraid to, he didn't want to say too much, but he revealed like there's going to be, you know, there's Loth cats in the Star Wars universe, and this episode, the season will feature Loth kittens, the young Loth cats. And he, you know, joked that like, you know, I got to pay for the show somehow, you know, as if to imply that that's going to move a lot of merchandise, which it probably will. But then the one thing he said, he revealed some concept art and behind the scenes stuff. And there was a very familiar looking mask. And he said, we've got Admiral Ackbar back for season two in a much, much bigger way. In fact, because this crowd will get it, he's going to go head to head with Thrawn. And then he said, you know, give him some competition. What's a Death Star compared to the blue guy? Let's go for it. And, I lost my mind. I genuinely am not kidding. I have a whole article about this on Slashfilm, which you can read. I genuinely love Admiral Ackbar as a character, truly do. And way more than a meme, way more than a guy with one famous line, love the character. And, you know, he is a admiral in the New Republic and you know, the Rebellion. He's a brilliant military strategist going up against Grand Admiral Thrawn, who is, you know, the brilliant military strategist. So, like, this is what Filoni does well, is taking these things that make sense that you haven't really thought about and giving an avenue to explore that. And the idea of, like, these two characters that I love deeply going, like, duking it out, like, is so cool, because we see so much in Star Wars. It's, you know, lightsaber to lightsaber, blaster to blaster, and this is going to be like tactician against tactician. Like, that's such a cool idea. And I'm so unbelievably excited about this. Like, it's such a great idea, and it doesn't feel forced. Like, it actually makes sense in the timeline that's when Ackbar would have been helping, you know, firm up the New Republic. And you know, Thrawn is going to represent a major threat to that. And it's just, like, it's cool and it makes sense. And again, I can't promise other people are going to be as thrilled about this as I am, but, you know, I am. And, yeah, the one other thing Filoni said is that, you know, he worked with Neil Scanlon, and he said that Neil and I want all that wiggle that the original puppet had. So the idea is that they're trying to make this, you know, whatever Ackbar is going to be on screen is going to be very, like, you know, wiggly and tactile, like the original puppet from, like, Return of the Jedi. So, yeah, all cool stuff. I can't hide my excitement about this, but I also, again, can't pretend like everybody else is as excited about it as I am.
Okay, so before we wrap, I just want to interrogate this love of Admiral Ackbar for a second. Where did that come from? Did it come from the movies? Did it come from the comics or the novels? Or, like, because I'm certainly not a huge Star Wars fan, as you know, Ryan. I've seen the movies, but, like, I'm not an obsessive. They were never really, like, my franchise growing up. But my memory is, like, there isn't really a ton for Admiral Ackbar to do in the movies. Did you, yeah, get that love from kind of extra material, or where'd that come from?
It generates from the movies, and so for me, like, Return of the Jedi is my favorite Star Wars movie, and, like, don't get me wrong, like, you know, everyone, it's a trap, and yeah, of course it's a meme, it's a gif, whatever, but, like, you know, to me that is actually a genuinely great Star Wars moment, where, you know, it's one of the all-time great line readings, and it's a, you know, this military mind realizing he's been pulled into a trap. But then just what everything else Admiral Ackbar does throughout that, what I consider to be the greatest space battle ever committed to screen. Like, I love that character, and that's what a lot of Star Wars is, right? Like, Boba Fett does not have a lot of screen time, but you can obsess over Boba Fett. So, like, I sort of developed that connection with Ackbar. But then, yeah, there is, like, you know, some of the stuff from the Clone Wars, and when you get to see him sort of that little bit in The Force Awakens and that little bit of The Last Jedi, when you realized he just became this old grizzled military man. And it's this idea that Star Wars does so well of, you know, what you're seeing implies a lot of what you're not seeing. And what I'm not seeing with Admiral Ackbar always, like, captured my imagination in the same way that, like, you know, with Boba Fett, it had a similar thing. So that's a lot of where it comes from. It's like, you know, the classic example I used, like, with Boba Fett, for example, is, like, there's a scene in The Empire Strikes Back when Han Solo, they're at Cloud City, and that door opens, and he sees Darth Vader. Han Solo does not hesitate, pulls out his blaster, starts shooting at Vader, doesn't even think about it. But he hears Boba Fett's name, and he gets scared. So why is he scared of Boba Fett and not Darth Vader, right? Like, that's all, that none of that's said on screen, but it's implied. So to me, like, this idea of Admiral Ackbar, this, like, trusted military general within the rebellion, and, like, what you're not seeing, how did he ascend to that position, you know, and all of these things, like, that, and just, you know, another important thing, he looks cool as hell. I like the look of Admiral Ackbar. I think he looks great. I love the voice. I love all of it. So for me, it's just all of that, I feel myself getting that, like, hyperventilating, like, nerd excitement over this. But yeah, no, I do genuinely, this isn't me just trying to be like some edgelord and say, like, I like the thing nobody else likes. I genuinely love this guy, and mm-hmm. I'm excited to see him get some screen time. So
very cool. All right. Well, yeah, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about everything we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of articles in the show notes. I encourage you to click on those. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.